The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday in the Israel Update with Anthony Reich, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov, Howard. Good, thank you. How are you doing today?
What is going on with regard to the parliament in Israel?
Yes, so we were all expecting the announcement yesterday from the Beit HaYehudi party, the Jewish Home Party, that they would leave the coalition, that Naftali Bennett would resign his position as education minister, that Ayala Shaked would also resign her position as Minister of Justice, and that would effectively force an election. But the news conference came and the news conference went, and Naftali Bennett announced that he's not leaving the coalition, which was quite a strange thing. Because someone smart once said, if you have nothing to say, then it's better not to say it. And it's better not to call a huge news conference in order not to say it. So it really seemed like Naftali Bennett had capitulated under the circumstances, because when the news conference was called, it seemed as if they really were going to make a huge announcement. And I have the sense that they may have been convinced during the time between the news conference having been called and the actual news conference taking place, they might have been convinced to change their minds about what they were going to say, because when the moment came, there was really no announcement at all. And so this has really left Netanyahu the big winner from yesterday's events. He's really strengthened his position. Some people are calling him a magician. Some people are claiming that he went and did backflips yesterday in celebration of the events of the day, because don't forget that he has a very narrow 61-seat coalition with only one seat majority. Obviously, that's the minimum number of seats that's required to form a coalition in the 120-seat Knesset. And so it seems as if, though, he's really come out very much stronger than before. He made the comment that the coalition is staying together, and he was very much on the front foot yesterday. Of course, Naftali Bennett was criticized by Avigdor Lieberman, who himself has now left his position as defense minister, as we know, and was hoping and expecting that Bennett would follow suit. But he has not followed suit. And so all bets are off at the moment as to what's going to happen next. I think, you know, from what I can see, the next big moment in this government is going to come when the budget needs to be passed. And that's always a very fraught exercise with lots and lots of internal political considerations, factions trying to fight their own corner. And that's where usually members of the coalition threaten the prime minister in order to get their own way from the budget by saying that they will leave the coalition if they don't get their own way. So I think that that's certainly going to be the next critical moment.
When does that happen?
But I don't. Well, the budget should really be discussed pretty soon. So I'm not exactly sure what the date of the discussion was. By the way, it was very interesting that straight after the announcement yesterday, there were some bills that were to be passed through the Knesset. The first bill that was introduced actually failed. It was not passed. It was defeated. The government was defeated in that bill. And then the government decided to pull the rest of the day's agenda away from the Knesset. They were voting on a bill dealing with how the government keeps track of land ownership. And the government was defeated by 42 votes to 47. And so they decided to pull the rest of the bills from the agenda from yesterday's Knesset session, because they just felt that the momentum was moving against them as a result of the events from yesterday. So at least for now, we continue to have a government that functions. We'll have to see whether Prime Minister Netanyahu does appoint that foreign minister that he had suggested he would appoint, in order to try to reduce the burden that he's carrying in terms of the number of ministries that he's responsible for. I heard this morning on the news that some sort of a survey was taken yesterday following these events to see how people would vote. And it's interesting that the number of seats that the Likud is forecast to get in the next Knesset if the election was held today is actually now reduced. So it seems like Prime Minister Netanyahu has certainly been damaged by the events of the last few days and the last week. Also, Naftali Bennett's party has been damaged, forecasting also a lesser number of seats than they currently hold in the Knesset. And actually, the winners are Avigdor Lieberman. He's forecast to get more seats than what he holds right now. And also, the coalition of left-wing parties are also predicted to gain some seats. Between now and the election, there's a lot that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we can necessarily rely on these numbers that have come out of the latest survey. But it's certainly an interesting snapshot in terms of where things are at this moment in time.
Absolutely fascinating. The other subject that I wanted to chat with you about is the obviously very, very controversial decision from Airbnb, and that is to not list West Bank properties on their website. Mervyn's saying if this Airbnb should now be banned from the entire country of Israel if they're discriminating about the occupied and inverted commas areas. So can you give us a bit of background here for anybody who's not aware of the story, and let's try and understand it a bit more.
Okay, I'm guessing that the listeners are familiar with Airbnb. They, of course. This website that rents out short-term apartments. They've become huge competitors against many of the major hotel chains and places around the world. And, of course, it's very popular in Israel and also for Israelis traveling abroad. We've heard a number of stories about discrimination against Israelis that has occurred from places that were rented on Airbnb, where individual apartment owners decided that they didn't welcome the prospect of having Israelis in their apartments. But on this occasion, this is an official Airbnb statement. And I'm going to read what was posted on the Airbnb website. It says the following. We concluded that we should remove the listings in Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank that are at the core of the dispute between Israelis and Palestinians. That's the statement, right? Now, we could take each part of that statement and absolutely rip it to shreds in Howard Saxteen's words. We could really do some damage to it because listings in Israeli settlements – that's something that we can talk about. We can talk about this concept of the occupied West Bank. And clearly we can talk a lot about whether this is really at the core of the dispute between Israelis and Palestinians. I would take issue more with that final statement than anything else that has been included in the statement that Airbnb put down. However, the bottom line of the story is that apparently something like 200 listings would effectively now be removed from Airbnb as a result of this policy decision that they've taken, and as a result of the fact that as far as Airbnb are concerned, these 200 locations are located in Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank. Now, you know, this is a subject that we could really talk at length about. And we're always inclined to kind of compare this to what Airbnb do elsewhere. Are there other places around the world that Airbnb has decided they don't want to list? And why is it that they don't want to list? Is it because Airbnb, I mean, they don't own the properties. They don't actually they're not actually gaining substantially. I mean, I know that Airbnb take a fee for all listings on their sites, where people rent properties and so on. Is Airbnb really selling a product that comes from this location? That's a good question, you know, that I've sort of thought a lot about. What happens in northern Cyprus, which is occupied by Turkey at the moment? Does Airbnb list locations there? Or, you know, we could go through a whole list of places where the Chinese are, you know, unwelcome occupiers in inverted commas of places, and Russia, and, you know, we could go through the list ad nauseum. But the question is, is Israel being singled out on this occasion? I don't know the answer to that. Maybe the listeners out there are more familiar with exactly what Airbnb's policies are about other locations around the world. But clearly there is a feeling that this is unjustified. Their statement is inaccurate, absolutely inaccurate, and really requires you know, some clarification. The policy seems to be ridiculous. Does it represent a victory for BDS? I suppose time will tell. The more we talk about it, the more of a victory we give them, I guess, right?
Yeah, the interesting thing is I looked up, I wanted to understand, even according to the Oslo Agreement, Jews are allowed to own properties on the West Bank. That was an agreement that was reached. Now, if that is the case, then what would be the problem in international law or anybody having an issue with them renting those properties out? It certainly does seem incredibly discriminatory to me.
That's a very good point that, you know, under the agreements that have been struck, particularly the Oslo agreement, and, you know, there are people subscribe to it and people who don't.
Yeah,
but we've got these
way,
areas,
actually,
A, B, and C, though.
Mm. Yes.
And certainly in some of those areas, there is no reason why Jews shouldn't own properties under the Oslo Accords. I mean, we've also had this discussion about why it's okay for Arabs to own properties in Israel and why it's not okay for Jews to own properties within the Palestinian Authority area, to the extent that the Palestinian Authority have even gone about executing people who have been found to be selling properties, selling land to Jews. Mm. I mean, it's a very, very frowned upon thing within the Palestinian Authority area for Jews to own any land at all. That is absolutely outlawed. This is something that we've discussed, and that seems to be very discriminatory, very contrary to international law. Nobody seems to take up any issue with it at the right places, but, you know, that's also a separate discussion within itself. So it seems to us that, you know, Airbnb are really just going beyond what they should be doing. I mean, is it okay, for example, for Twitter to say anybody who lives within the so-called occupied West Bank shouldn't be allowed to tweet or shouldn't be allowed to have a Facebook account? What's the issue here? They're not selling cans of beans that are produced there. And even if they were, you know, under the international agreements, this is very much supported.
I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 0618951019. Anthony, before I let you go, if you can just tell us quickly, the Palestinian Authority have claims that they have forgone an offer of billions of US dollars because they were unprepared to give concessions on Jerusalem. Who offered them the money?
Well, we don't know who offered them the money, and this was a statement that was made by a senior advisor to the Palestinian Authority president, somebody by the name of Mahmoud Khabash, not to be confused with Mahmoud Abbas. But he's a senior advisor to the president of the Palestinian Authority, and he was making a speech yesterday on the birthday of the Prophet Muhammad at the Mukatta in Ramallah. President Abbas was actually in attendance, and he said that President Abbas was offered billions of dollars just to say that the Palestinians are prepared to reach understandings of Jerusalem so that it would become the united capital of Israel. That's apparently what they were asked to do. And apparently they gave up that opportunity to take in the money because they are unprepared, as they've said, to give up 1 inch of the soil of Jerusalem. And so this is their way of trying to show themselves to be heroes, even though they need the money, even though the Palestinian Authority is really struggling financially. They gave up this opportunity, and they would rather stand firm on the issue of Jerusalem than get money. Of course, you know, behind the scenes, we know that certainly the leaders of the Palestinian Authority are not worried about where their next meal is going to be coming from. They've looked after themselves very well with all their offshore bank accounts. So they've done very well. But this is their way of somehow also trying to show up Hamas, who received all this money from Qatar in order to keep the Gaza Strip operating, and saying that as far as they're concerned, you know, this is like selling out their souls. So an interesting discussion, interesting statements. We'll talk a little bit more about it during the course of the week and the time that comes ahead of time.
Absolutely right. Time is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. That was Anthony with the Israel Report, coming to you every weekday morning, Monday through till Thursday at 7:45.